Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson, and today I am thrilled to introduce you to a series of books that I think is better than the Game of Thrones books. I'm going to tell you why, but first I just want to say, no shade to George R.R. Martin. He is a lovely human. We had him on Nerdette. He was very kind. I liked him a lot. George, this is nothing personal, but here are my criteria. One, this other series is feminist as f***. And two, it's actually finished. Yep, it's four books. They're all out in the world. And the series is called the Nine Realms series, and it's by Sarah Kozloff. And here is Sarah summing up 2,000 pages in one sentence.
An epic fantasy about a young princess who must grow up and fight her way back to the throne.
That, my friend, is a sentence that gives me goosebumps. And what's extra awesomely cool about Sarah is that her own story is super interesting, too. She's somebody who completely changed career paths pretty much because of the Bechdel test. She used to be a film professor at Vassar College, and now she is a full-time fantasy author. Sarah, welcome to Nerdette.
Thanks for having me, Greta.
So what do you think? Was that like a fair characterization or did I exaggerate a little bit?
Actually, it's absolutely true.
Yes.
Although whenever I say this, I have to look around and be sure everybody understands what the Bechdel test is.
I'm so glad to hear you
Will
say that.
Your listeners know the Bechdel test?
I mean, you know, I think it's fair to say the Nerdette audience is probably pretty familiar with it, but can you explain it for people who are like, bet what?
Okay. It's named after an author and comic writer named Alison Bechdel, who's
yep.
done a lot of wonderful things, including the very famous book and play of Funhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But she wrote just a little comic strip some years ago about sexism in stories. And she said that we would have to create a really low bar.
It is a very low bar.
It is such a low bar. I mean, you could, an ant could limbo underneath it. You have to have two women mm-hmm. who have names, mm-hmm. not just the waitress, the mother, the girlfriend.
Right.
They have to talk to each other.
I don't know. You're getting pretty demanding, Sarah.
Demanding, right? And they have to talk to each other about something else than the male protagonist of the story.
Than a dude. Yep.
Right. So I was sitting in class. This was a very select seminar of seniors. We were studying women filmmakers, and we were just looking at this list of movies that did not pass the Bechdel mm-hmm. test.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was The Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And people said to me, wait, there's great women in Lord of the Rings. Yes,
sure.
There is. There's Galadriel, and there's Eowyn, and there's Arwen Evenstar.
Mm-hmm.
But they never talk to each other. They are all in separate storylines. And if they did talk to each other, they probably would be talking about a dude. So I saw that. And I can remember that moment so
really?
Clearly.
So you're like literally sitting in a class looking at this list.
I'm sitting in class looking at this list. I see The Lord of the Rings. And I said, I'm going to write an epic fantasy that does pass the Bechdel test. And of course, there are hundreds of fantasies that do pass the Bechdel test. But this one is mine. And the first idea was what if Aragorn had been a woman? And what if the heir to the throne was in hiding, like Aragorn is in hiding as Strider? Mm-hmm. It's all based on Bilbo's poem about all that is gold does not glitter.
So Lord of the Rings really had like a strong resonance for you then. It must have, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm of the generation.
Yeah. So you grew up reading those books?
I did. Actually, it's, I don't know if you find this interesting, but the first time I read them, my brother read them aloud to me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And he wanted me to start The Hobbit, and I looked at the small print. I was 8 years old. I looked at the small print and was a little daunted.
And so he's older than you, your brother?
Yes, he's older, and he's always been the one who gave me books and took me to movies and things like that. So we had just moved to Denver. None of us had any friends. It was the summertime. And he started reading The Hobbit, and he read the whole summer through. And it was just this incredible experience to experience The Lord of the Rings, but also to experience it with my brothers.
Yeah.
As an escape from, you know, a sort of difficult family move and a lonely summer. The idea that there were these fantasy worlds that you could go to.
I have a suspicion that I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway, which is, when you were listening to those books, did you have a hard time figuring out where you fit in that story? Like, did you think to yourself, I mean, obviously the Bechdel test didn't exist when you were a kid, but did you have moments of like, man, I wish there were some more ladies interacting with each other in these stories? Or were you like adaptable enough at that point and used to reading stories with dude protagonists that you just didn't worry about it because that's just what the world was?
The second. I was 8 years old. We're talking about 1964. Mm-hmm. This is just 1 year after The Feminine Mystique had come out.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it, you know, that kind of questions of representation were not in my consciousness.
Yeah.
The fact that, as many people do, you, as a child, you identify with the hobbits as little people and frightened and, you know, out of their comfort zone. And the fact they're not very male in the book, you know?
That's true, yeah. They're more like just creatures.
Yeah, more like young and vulnerable. Mm-hmm. No, I did not think about, I loved Galadriel, but I did not think about women at that time.
Yeah.
You have a lot to learn in your life from eight on.
Of course, of course. So you mentioned that there are plenty of books, plenty of fantasy series out there these days that do pass the Bechdel test, that are mm-hmm. much more feminist. You mm-hmm. are not at all wrong. There are a bunch, but I will say, like, I still think of high fantasy as being something that, especially historically, when you think of your Lord of the Rings, is, even when you think of your Game of Thrones, it's not hella feminist.
Right.
So why stay in the high fantasy space for you? Like, were you kind of committed to the idea of like rebranding that genre?
Yeah, I was. As totally arrogant, I'm sorry, as that might sound. Because I know you've read a little bit about me. This was my first attempt at creative writing. I had never written a short story before.
That is audacious. And how many pages did you end up writing? I should have added them up. Do you know?
It's about 2,000. And I just got into the story, and it was wonderful. It's that experience that psychologists call flow, where you look up and 4 hours have passed and you weren't even aware of it. I got to go to an Aeon, just like as a child I got to go to Middle Earth. That's what I most wanted.
So how do you keep your, you know, I don't know. It was interesting thinking about talking to you for this because I kept wanting to ask you about your research process and then reminding myself that none of these places are actually real. So how do you keep your imagination organized for a series like this where you have all these different countries, all these different characters in different places, different timelines? Like, you know, how did you do it? Was it just like insane conspiracy theory, like post-it notes on the wall with thread?
I never used a post-it note and I didn't outline anything. I was an inveterate pantser. I just started.
Wow.
And then there was this very long editing process. Mm-hmm. Which was as long as writing the whole deal. It took me 3 years to sort of rewrite, edit. And then I had a terrific copy editor. Deanna Hoke has won awards from sci-fi organizations. Mm. And I wasn't supposed to talk to her either. But I established... I established a connection with her. And she would send me... She said, Sarah... Your distances are wrong from here to here. It can't take that many days or, you know, whatever. So I really needed someone as precise and careful as Deanna to help me at the end.
Okay, so what you're saying is you decided to start these books on a whim. Mm-hmm. You wrote all of them in one go.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't stress any of it along the way?
I don't know. What do you mean by stress?
I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just so impressed by your audacity with the whole thing.
Well, I didn't have anything to lose, Greta. Mm. I have already made my career as a film professor, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was doing this sort of for myself. And it wasn't until it was all finished that I started to get ambitious about finding an agent and finding an editor and publishing it. And I got very strange reactions at that point. Some people said, what do you mean you've written it all? I can't sell the whole thing until I sell the first book. The agent I eventually went with said, this is amazing. This is fantastic.
Perfect.
And then Jennifer Gunnels, my editor at Tor, she's the one who said, let's do rapid publication.
Yeah, that's something else that stands out about these books is that the first one came out in January of this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by April, they were all out in the world. You could get the entire series and read them from start to finish.
Absolutely.
Which, yeah, you hinted at, but I think that is another way that these books really stand out is that this series is complete, which, you know, I can think of two series right off the bat, you know, Game of Thrones being one of them. And, what's that? The Name of the Wind? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Patrick Rothfuss.
Yes, and Patrick Rothfuss's Name of the Wind series, which both are like very highly anticipated, long awaited
10
books.
Years.
Yeah.
I don't remember Wise Man's Fool or whatever, the second Patrick Rothfuss one. I'd have to go back and reread it.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And I didn't want that for my reader. I wanted them to have the experience that I had when I was an 8-year-old. We would sort of sprawl on the floor, lie upside down on the couch or whatever while my brother was reading. And he read, because we were wiggly little kids, you know, and he read us the whole thing. And there was no waiting 18 months, 2 years, 5 years to find out what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What I really wanted was, not to leave anybody hanging like some famous fantasy authors have. I didn't want to say, oh, come on, commit to my story, but I'm not going to commit to finishing it.
So do you think the moral of your story, your personal story, is to just go for it?
Yeah, One of these blog sites, women writers, asked me to write something about how I happened to do this. And I wrote about when I was 5 and I thought I could swim, and I jumped into the deep end of the pool. Mm-hmm. And the teenage lifeguard jumped in and pulled me out. And I was very, very offended because I was not drowning. I could swim. So somehow writing these 4 long epic fantasies is like jumping into the deep end of the pool, right?
Yeah.
And now, how would I feel about it if I never got an agent, if I never got it published, if nobody ever liked it? I don't know. I hope, yeah, I would have drowned. But I hope I would have still thought that those hours of writing were worth it in my happiness.
That's beautiful. I love the just jump in the deep end. Like, I think especially for women, often it's that encouragement.
Yeah.
To just be confident and, you know, like, give it a shot. What do you got to lose? Like, just go for it.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Whatever your dream is, if it's to paint, to dance, to swim, anything, do it.
Sarah Kozloff, such an inspiring story, such great books. The first one in the Nine Realms series is called Queen in Hiding, and I definitely, obviously, think you should read it. All right, one more thing you don't want to miss in just a minute.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, I am very excited to tell you that it is time for one of my favorite segments.
Greta News. It's now time for Greta News.
Yeah!
That's right, Greta News. Though, what I'm about to tell you actually also fits under the category of bad bitch birthdays, too, because on September 18th, 1905, Greta Garbo was born. Now, I am a fan of all Gretas, and the Swedish-American actress is no exception. She was famous for that line, "I want to be alone," but she actually told Life magazine in 1955 that she was misquoted. "I never said I wanted to be alone," she explained. "I said I wanted to be let alone, and there is all the difference." I would like to raise a glass to all you introverts out there, whether or not you are named Greta. I hope you get some good alone time this weekend, or people time. I mean, whatever you need. I love y'all extroverts too. All right, that's it for today. The show is produced by me and Justin Bowl. Our executive producer is Brendan Banizak. We will see you on Tuesday.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.